Well, good morning. You notice who wrote those last songs that we just sang? Do you know her? You know Glenda? Glenda Shales, Barnhart Shales. I don't know her, but I knew her daddy. Her daddy was my English teacher at FC. Okay, I got to tell the story real quick. The room he was teaching in had windows all around it, and it had windows behind him. So somebody had this lizard mask, and they dared me to put that thing on and while he was speaking, stick my head up. So being the dummy that I am sometimes, I did that while the class was going on. He didn't know what's going on. Everybody's laughing. They don't know what's happening. He thought he'd said something funny. And about that time, I took off running before he caught me. But I love Brother Barnhart. He was really a good man. I want you to imagine for yourself that you're walking down a dusty road, and you come around a bend, and there you see a corpse. And standing next to the corpse is a donkey. And standing next to the donkey is a lion. The lion obviously has killed the man, the corpse there. But he doesn't seem too interested in the donkey. What does this all mean? What I've just described is a picture that's painted for us in 1 Kings chapter 13. So go ahead and turn to 1 Kings chapter 13. We have the story of a prophet, and I'll just call him an unnamed prophet as we continue our series of Lost in the Credits. I think so far about every person we've talked about had a name, but this morning we're going to talk about somebody who's never named. We're never told the name of this prophet. Yet what we read in chapter 13 of 1 Kings is an extraordinary story when you step back and think about what has happened. What I've just read, it's disturbing too. And we'll certainly make mention of that. All right, 1 Kings chapter 12, we know that after the death of Solomon, Rehoboam becomes king of Israel. People from the north come down and ask Rehoboam, hey, would you give us a tax break? All those buildings in the temple that Solomon built during his reign cost money. And so he had levied heavy taxes against the people. And so the people come now and ask the king, will you give us the tax break? And if you'll do that, we'll serve you for the rest of our lives. Well, Rehoboam first goes to the older counselors, those that would have been counselors to his father. And he asks them, what do you suggest? Should I lower taxes? And they said, hey, listen, if you lower taxes, they will serve you for that. That'll be the greatest thing for you to do, lower taxes. All right? So then he goes to the younger counselors, probably people that were more his age, people he might have been raised around. And he sought their advice. Now look at 1 Kings chapter 12, verses 10 through 11 real quick there. He says, that you should speak to the people who have spoken to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to them, my little finger shall be thicker than all my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chased you with whips, but I will chase you with scourges. Translated, raise taxes. Stick it to them. Well, who do you think Rehoboam listened to? Well, he listened to the younger advisors. Raise his taxes. The people said, we're through with y'all. You know, we have no part of Judah. We have no part of David's house. And so they went back home. Well, you can read what happens after that in chapter 12 there. But one of the things, and this leads to the dividing of the kingdom, certainly. One of the things that bothered Rehoboam, though, and what he understood was that, you know, you've got folks up there, and they're going to be a threat to us. So he raises an army, but God says, no, you're not to go to war against them. This is my will, all right? And so you've got the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Southern kingdom, the king is Rehoboam, the northern kingdom of Israel is going to be Jeroboam, an Ephraimite. Well, Jeroboam knows that people still like to worship down in Jerusalem. And he figures, you know, if folks start going down there, they're going to long to be back united with those people down there. And so I've got to do something. They're going to come back up here and kill me. That happens. So I've got to do something about that. And so what Jeroboam does at the end of chapter 12 is that he institutes what I call Jeroboam's religion. And you can call it anything you want. But really, he changes three things. He changes the place where people go worship. He sets up golden calves in Bethel and in Dan up the north. He allows anybody from any tribe can be a priest. And we know priests from the north were migrating back south. They were leaving the north. And so, hey, if you're from the tribe of Zebulun, if you want to be a priest, then be a priest. All right. And he changes the time of the feast. And so he really changes three elements of worship. It becomes Jeroboam's worship. That brings us to chapter 13. Time has come to inaugurate the new Jeroboam religion. All right? Look in chapter 3 there. Chapter 13, that is. It says in verse 1, "And behold, a man of God went from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Lord, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. Then he cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord, and said, O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a child, Josiah by name, shall be born to the house of David, and on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and men's bones shall be burned on you. And he gave a sign that same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Surely the altar shall split apart, and the ashes on it shall be poured out." And so this unnamed prophet from where? From the south, from Judah, comes up there, tells Jeroboam, listen, there's going to be a guy that's going to come along here by the name of Josiah, and that's going to be, what, about 300 years, I think, later. He's going to come here, he's going to burn the very bones of the priests who serve this place here. And this altar is going to be split apart. Well, in verse 4, what happens? The altar splits apart, the ashes are poured out. Well, Jeroboam is standing there. Jeroboam is going to be the one that's going to offer the sacrifice. His big party has just come to a crashing, end, you might say. And he says and points out his finger and says, arrest that guy. Well, as soon as he does that, his arm withers. Uh-oh. God's with this guy. He asks the prophet, hey, can you restore my arm? The prophet does that. And then in chapter 13 there, it says that he asked the prophet to come home with him. Let me make you a big feast. Let me give you some wealth in some way, a fortune. And then the prophet speaks up. Look at verse 8 there. Here's his answer to Jeroboam. If you were to give me half your house, I would not go in with you. Nor would I eat bread nor drink water in this place. For so was commanded by me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall not eat bread nor drink water nor return by the same way you came. And so God had told this prophet, you get up there, you're not to take anything from them, folks. Not take anything at all, whether it's wealth or whether it's a meal. And when you come back home, you come back a different direction. You come back a different way, all right? So that's what we know about this, really this prophet here. That's all we really know. And so he leaves, and he's going to make his way home by a different route. Now, if the story ended right there, that would be a great story, wouldn't it? We'd have this unnamed prophet that's done as God has commanded him to do. He's stood down Jeroboam, who's altering the word of God, and certainly through sacrifices and such like. But then the story picks up with something else. Now look at verse 11 here. Now an old prophet dwelt in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all the works that the man of God had done that day in Bethel. They also told their father the words which he had spoken to the king. And so the text tells us there's an older prophet living there in Bethel. He hadn't been there that morning. And which raises the question, well, why wasn't he there? Had he somewhat retired, perhaps? Had he not want to compromise the faith that he might have still had in God by going there? We're not told, but he's intrigued certainly by what the young prophet had done, hadn't he, this unnamed prophet? And so in verse 14 there, the old prophet goes and finds the younger prophet. He's sitting under an oak tree. And he says in verse 15, he says, come home with me and eat bread. But the unnamed prophet says, I can't do that. God has told me not to eat anything while I'm up here. But look what the older prophet says next, verse 18. He says, I too am a prophet. You are. An angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back into your house that he may eat bread and drink water. Parentheses, he was lying to him. So he went back with him, ate bread in the house, drank water. Now get the full picture here. Here's this unnamed young prophet sitting in a tree, going back home a different way. The older prophet comes, said, hey, come to my house. He said, I can't do that. And then the older prophet said, well, you know what? An angel's told me to come find you and bring you back home with me. But the text says he's lying, didn't he? Well, the next day we know what happens. The younger prophet gets up and goes home with the older prophet. They're sitting there having a meal. And while they're eating, God will speak through the mouth of the older prophet. Verse 21. Thus says the Lord, because you have disobeyed the word of the Lord and have not kept the commandment which the Lord your God commanded you, but you came back, ate bread, drank water in the place in which the Lord said to you, eat no bread and drink no water, your corpse shall not come to the tomb of your father. An older prophet has lied to him, brought him back home, and while they're sitting at dinner, God speaks to the voice, the mouth of the older prophet. And he tells him, because you've disobeyed me, you're going to die. You're not going to be buried in the tombs of your fathers. And then verse 23, this brings us to what I started our lesson with. So it was after he had eaten bread and after he had drank, they settled the donkey for him, the prophet whom he had brought him. And when he was gone, a lion met him on the road and killed him. And his corpse was thrown on the road, and the donkey stood by, and the lion also stood by the corpse. Now the text goes on to say that some people were traveling by, saw this sight. It's an amazing sight. You've got to admit that. A corpse, a donkey, a lion. Lion seems uninterested in eating the man or attacking the donkey. They go back. Word comes to the old prophet. He immediately puts two and two together. He goes and he recovers the body of the young prophet, brings him back and buries him and tells his sons that when I die, bury me next to this young man. Now, will somebody tell me what lessons we take from that? Because I'm going to attempt to give you some lessons out of what this story is about here. I hope you're disturbed by it, because it is a disturbing story. A young man who starts off so well, and then an older man who lies to him, and he brings him home, ends up because of him following the lie that he was told, now dies. All right, let's see if we can't get some lessons. First off, one of the lessons I would say about this is that Satan never gives up. This young prophet had resisted a meal, a feast, home of Jeroboam, a fortune, perhaps. He resisted the first invitation by the older prophet. And despite the resistance and doing the right thing, Satan persisted, and the prophet was finally captured. And I think that illustrates for us that Satan, he doesn't ever give up, does he? And that persistence of Satan, I think, is certainly seen in temptations of Christ. Matthew chapter 3, verse 1, then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. In Luke chapter 4, verse 2, Christ was being tempted for 40 days by the devil. Ongoing. Satan never gave up. And he doesn't give up with this young prophet right here. Luke chapter 4, verse 13. Now when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. That wasn't going to end there. The temptations, that wasn't ending all there. It's just going to be another time, somewhere down the road there. And so Satan doesn't give up. I remember an illustration of General George Patton. Those of you who know your World War II history know about George Patton. Probably one of the most famous American generals, tank commanders, led the Third Army. Got through the war without a scratch, and he was in a lot of combat situations. Not a scratch. I think it was, 2 weeks or 2 months? Was it 2 weeks? A couple months. Just a couple months after the war was over. The car that he was riding in the back seat was bumped into an Army truck. Patton hits his head, becomes paralyzed, and 2 weeks later dies. Now, I say that because here's somebody who made it through a war with not a scratch and something very simple. In fact, the driver of the car that he was in, not a scratch on him. Just a freak type of accident. That I think it illustrates that, you know, we may flee something that might tempt us at one time, but then succumb to something else, because Satan never gives up. You think about a young man who flees youthful lust, and then he succumbs to, middle-aged worldliness. Or a man who resists the greed of middle age succumbs to the discouragement of older age. And we might fight the introduction of false doctrines, but we might be proud and self-righteous in that. And so I think one of the lessons we kind of get from there is that Satan didn't give up. You know, he turned down Jeroboam. All right, that's one, but I'm going to get him through somewhere else. And he did, didn't he? Secondly, and this is obvious, I think, we need to be careful who you believe. Be careful who we believe. Believing a lie and disrespecting God's truth lies at the root of the all condemnation, certainly. And appearances and intentions can be deceptive. The old prophet was the enemy in disguise. The younger man trusted him to the point that it cost him his life. God had told him specifically what not to do. Yet the older prophet says, what? An angel came to me and told me to go get you and bring you home. Now, probably some of you are thinking about Galatians chapter 1, aren't you? What does Galatians chapter 1, verse 8 say? It says this, but even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. Let him be accursed. I can't help but connect that with what we find back here in 1 Kings chapter 13. This old man has went and lied to the younger prophet. Was God using him to test the younger prophet? I don't know if I'd go that far. But I know this, that because of what he does, that it ends up costing that young man's life. The fact that he's not even buried with his fathers, which was, of course, a great honor, you know, to be buried in the family plot. He wouldn't even get that. And so he was deceived by a person that he ended up following. You go back and look at what happens back there in the book of Galatians, as Paul talked about that fact, about not following somebody, whether it even be an angel. We know that many of them did, didn't they? Because it continues the discussion, even in chapter 5 there, about those who believe the lie and have fallen from grace. And so the warning is still for us today. We need to test the spirits, of what John says, 1 John chapter 4, verse 1. Don't believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out to the world. I can name two or three gospel preachers right now who have preached in this county, who've had meetings in this county. North Alabama. They did work in Alabama that are false teachers. They have left the faith. They've left everything that they once believed and taught. And you know what? They took some people with them. Because those people put a lot of trust in that individual. Test the spirit. They stopped testing and started following a man. That's what happened. And so we should put every word to test. Search the scriptures. Romans chapter 3, verse 4 says, let God be true and every man a liar. And finally, sin shouldn't make us angry. This story is upsetting to me and maybe to you also. Because here's a man that was seduced by an older prophet who leads him into disobedience by lying to him about the will of God. And then the first prophet is held accountable for his disobedience and killed by the lion, though he was tricked by the second prophet, the older prophet. And as far as I can read from the text, it's not really stated. He just says, hey, when I die, you know, bury me next to the younger prophet. Am I wrong to assume perhaps that he had what I would say, you know, a peaceful death? He wasn't mauled by a lion, perhaps. It doesn't seem right, does it? But that's how sin should make us angry. It should make us upset. The sin of Jeroboam in chapter 12 should have upset a lot of people. But a lot of people followed Jeroboam in apostasy and in idolatry. And the priests that were made to serve the people were leading people down the wrong path. And so really, what we find here in the young prophet, I think maybe in a way is really just illustrating what's happening as a whole in the nation of Israel and what Jeroboam was doing to those folks up there. But it ought to make us upset. And we ought to be upset today when we see sin. You know, one thing about it today, we don't have to wonder what's happening in the world, do we? We have instant verification. Evidence of what's going on in the world. And I know people say it's never been as bad as this. Yeah, it's been as bad as this. We just didn't know it, I think is what really the point is, you know. We didn't know it. We didn't have the instant acknowledgement of that and evidence of that before that we have now. But that still ought to make us upset. When we see what people are doing, the advocating of murdering children ought to just irritate us to no end. Homosexual marriage ought to infuriate us. And you can just go down the list, all right? I'll tell you another thing that ought to infuriate us is when we allow false doctrine in the church. We allow the changing of worship to, you know, where we use instruments and have leaders that, we have elders who are women, which I still can't figure that one out in some places. That ought to infuriate us. Now people have brought in their innovations to the work of the church also. These are big deals, and we need to be upset by them. And perhaps maybe what we find here in 1 Kings chapter 13 is an upsetting passage to snap us back into reality. To know we face a roaring lion that goes around trying to devour us. All right, that's all I've got. Any other? Go, here we go, Brother Binkley, then Daryl. Oh, yeah.
And they were even trying to get the people to settle on the idea that too far.
Yep, too far. You can go right here. Mac, I've got two places, the north and south. Yeah. Yeah.
We have a lot of people like that.
Very convenient. Yeah. Daryl? Younger prophet.
Was from God, yet there's no doubt that he knew that that was from God.
Yeah.
So there should have been no
hesitation. Yeah.
To say, no, I don't know who you
yeah.
are. But it's very easy to start trusting people who will trust
them. Yeah, exactly.
And seem trustworthy and all that. And so to me, the carefulness is in really is to go verify
what you've been told. Good point. Yeah, good point.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Josiah's making this report spread here. There's a monument to this unnamed prophet.
Yeah, there is.
And they defile all the other two.
Right. Leave his alone. Good point. Yeah, that's the rest of the story, as old Paul Harvey would say. All right, and also Josiah burns the bones of the priest. Yep. All right, we'll stop here then.